This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
One of the big questions is,
what is money?
Practical purposes, it exists in a series of heterogeneous databases, very different databases.
Do you believe in crypto?
Digital currency may be an answer.
But it is the highly speculative asset.
I do own Bitcoin.
There is no second best.
Welcome to the Crypto Curious Podcast, your weekly crypto crash course. Every Wednesday, join us in the dynamic world of cryptocurrency as we cover everything from major stories to short, sharp news bites. Whether you're starting out in crypto or you're a veteran, we've got your back. Tune in, laugh and learn. It's crypto made easy. Today's episode is another big one. We're talking the latest on Solana's surprise resilience despite a major outage, California's crypto community rallying for a change in 2024's elections, and exciting developments from Coinbase that could redefine payment systems globally. Plus, we've got the perfect guest for this. It's John O'Loughlin from Coinbase APAC. He's here to deep dive into these topics and share his vision for the market's future. John and Blake, welcome to this week's show.
Hey, Trace. Good to be here. Hey, John.
Yeah, hey. Likewise, Tracy and Blake. Pleasure, and can't wait to see what we're talking about today. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here, John.
Is it worth John giving a bit of an intro of himself?
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I'm a Kiwi, traded up, married an Aussie, and probably not an entirely unique kind of journey. But yeah, started out in TradFi, went offshore from New Zealand right after high school, and then after some time in the States studying, got into the kind of investment banking space, really looking at technology and really mobile technology back then with the very earliest kind of 3G players and the likes of Vodafones and Ericssons and Nokias. So always had a kind of interest in tech, then pivoted to China, got in the food business for about a decade and saw a lot of the early kind of super apps come to bear like WeChat and Alipay, Grab and these guys. And that was really a massive kind of reckoning in terms of grabbing eyeballs and attention and also loyalty. And then that led on to QR codes. Moved back to Australia 2014 and worked with Alibaba and Ant Group building their business, which was clearly a really big trade channel out your way. And so Australia and New Zealand had a really healthy trade in that area. And then lots of Chinese tourists coming down here using Alipay and WeChat Pay, and lots of similarities in the ways of, you know, how do you really activate these apps on big retail platforms like crypto.com or Bamboo or Coinbase, et cetera, and crypto. So my brother-in-law is in crypto, heavily invested in Singapore with a real estate token business. And then I had a bit of a foray with Gemini, and now coming up to 2 years with Coinbase, initially launching the Aussie business, retail business, and now helping lead the APAC business, which has the bulk of the team up in Singapore. But that remit kind of stretches from India to Japan.
Wow, fantastic. Massive breadth of experience there.
Absolutely. So where is it that you're actually based, John?
Yeah, I'm in Sydney. We've got a WeWork in Barangaroo, and we've got a couple of team members in Australia. It's probably actually 35-odd Aussies at Coinbase, kind of dotted around the world, and lucky that a bunch of them are in leadership posts, so good little Aussie mates Slack group internally. But unfortunately, a lot of Aussies getting themselves into the news a lot with nothing to do with crypto in Australia, kind of gaining the headlines here. So we're trying to tell some of the good stories as well.
Oh, that's great. Well, look, that's an amazing story, and we're grateful that you could be with us here today. So let's get into some news. Guys, we've seen $50,000 USD hit overnight. We woke up to that this morning, which is around 75,000 Australian dollars. So that is big news. We haven't hit that in 2 years.
No, I think everyone was expecting a little bit of a pullback after, you know, the crazy rally that we've had, you know, throughout 2023, the latter half of 2023 and into this year. But it just goes from strength to strength.
Mm. What are your thoughts there, John?
Yeah, look, I think we're always confident that this was going to be a really important move with these spot ETFs coming into the market around BTC. I think overnight we've seen some big filings or preparations for them from Franklin Templeton for an ETH spot. And I think overall, you know, conservatively, if all of these large funds are going to allocate 50 basis points to 1% of their assets to, let's just call them more broadly, digital assets, then that's a really significant pool of capital. And I think that train has left the station clearly. So that's exciting. And I think Australians are beginning to really appreciate that.
Mm. Yeah, I think we saw Fidelity come out last week allocating 1% to one of their diversified ETFs to cryptocurrency, which is a massive move. You know, if all of these diversified ETFs allocate 1% to 2% to cryptocurrency, we're talking about substantial amounts of capital coming into the space over the next 12 months.
Mm.
Yeah, if you look at other asset classes, and I spend a lot of time with financial sponsors and private equity and venture capital, Australia's kind of has a two or three lag kind of probably behind the North American markets in terms of how do the big funds and, you know, not even talking about self-managed super funds that probably understand the relevance of crypto. When you look at the big Aussie super funds, let's say there's maybe 15 in the future or maybe 10, they're going to clearly take a few more years to appreciate this and get it past their kind of governance and kind of risk appetites. But when that pool of money gets unlocked in the way that it is in North America right now, then I think, you know, that's squarely another milestone in terms of looking at it through an Australian lens.
Talking of milestones, everyone likes to think about where we might end up with that Bitcoin price at the end of the year. But looking a little bit closer, we've got the halving in just a couple of months. And, you know, everyone expects a run up towards that. We've already hit 50K. Who knows where we'll be in a couple of months' time. So that's exciting stuff. And I think while we've got you, John, we will wait to the end of the show because people have to wait around to get some predictions from you on price and maybe the market. So stick around. But let's roll in, guys, to our first story that we'll talk about. And just last week, Craig, our co-host who's not on today, but he professed it was Solana summer and Solana was on the up. And like a curse, it saw a major outage that very next day. It's experienced a five-hour outage early on the morning of 7th of February. And this was the fifth longest in the network's history. And it hadn't happened, I think, in almost a year. So the Solana engineering team released a new validator software patch to resolve the issue. And it was fixed straight away. But still, Blake, wasn't a good look for Solana.
Yeah, that's right. Solana's price surprisingly held up despite the disruption, only dropping about 4%. Now, you know, other networks have had these outages before. You know, Solana is still relatively young compared to some of the other chains like Ethereum and Bitcoin. And this is, you know, somewhat to be expected. But, you know, these guys have substantial resources. I'm surprised it was down for so long, really.
I don't know. The price didn't really stay down for too long and bounced back. But they do get a lot of heat on their outages, particularly yeah, Solana.
For sure. It gives people something to talk about.
Something to talk about, yeah.
John, what do you reckon of this one?
Yeah, I think this industry moves a lot faster. And we can talk about how fast you can move money around versus remitting it with MoneyGram or someone else. But yeah, that type of five-hour period is something you probably expect of an Optus or a Medibank. And clearly there have been a lot of people who have been in the crosshairs of outages in Australia in recent times. So I think that was surprising, but I think to your points, very strong community, lots of loyalty. You know, they're sold out, their new Solana phone, pre-sales, $100,000, kind of pre-funds itself. So
yeah,
I think they're clearly one of the respected names in the space.
Yeah, didn't take too much of a hit there. Moving on to our second story, looking to the US now and the upcoming elections, California's crypto community is lining up to get behind the pro-crypto candidates for 2024 elections, showcasing the power of 8.2 million digital asset owners. This one, John, you could probably tell us a little bit about this one because Coinbase is spearheading this movement. How do you see the efforts influencing the crypto policies, not just in California, but around the nation?
Yeah, thanks, Tracy. Look, clearly California's been a liberal state for some time, having been a Republican one for a long time. And I think in the current environment, we're seeing a kind of new demographic emerge where people will be coming into adulthood and lots of people kind of in the 18 to 34 bracket. This polling by Toluna shows that these owners represent the next generation of California voters. And I think that's why we're probably looking at it and wanting to explore it and understand it more. It's a very progressive cohort of voters. And so we're seeing this younger generation, whether it's, you know, with the Swiftposium in Melbourne, it's just a completely set of, you know, different set of behaviors compared to maybe boomers and millennials and other people before them. This is probably part of a bigger story that Coinbase have been wanting to tell, is really a rising tide for the whole industry, which we call Stand With Crypto. We've been taking entrepreneurs and founders and blockchain kind of moonshots and all sorts of case studies around payment rails and other things down to Washington a few months ago with our founder Brian Armstrong. We drove the equivalent of like a Brinks money truck from New York to Washington and through various kind of traffic jams and debacles showed just how painful and slow it is to move money around. And that's the whole idea. You know, people want more access, they want more speed, they want lower costs. And it's all kind of tied into the expectations of these, you know, Gen Z adults and millennials, the majority of them who are probably going to support crypto-friendly candidates. And they're a very vocal minority who are used to having access of some form that's different to even a decade ago. So I think that's where we see it kind of playing out. And that's why we want to make some noise about it and really build it into this whole Stand With Crypto campaign of voters who are embracing crypto across North America. We're also, you know, excited to be bringing that type of campaign to Australia. We're looking on a program right now to get similar understanding of crypto adoption in Australia, not just in terms of like how many people have crypto, because that's been well canvassed, whether it's CBA or Treasury or the ATO, but rather what are their, you know, underlying inherent behaviors and views on the costs of sending money, the fees that bank charge, the access to bank, getting KYC'd, you know, trying to actually, you know, address all this debanking issues as well, which I think we know in our industry, whether it's Coinbase or your own businesses, is a real issue.
Yeah, we'll be happy to support any research that you guys want to do there, John. but yeah, I think you're right. There is a generational divide. Younger people that have used these technologies, it then becomes the benchmark, of sending money around in the matter of seconds with low friction. And they expect it, you know. And those people that are used to using traditional rails, having traditional fee models and traditional channels, they're not really... They're happy to stick with what they know. They're not really incentivized to move across and learn new technologies. So, yeah, I think you're definitely cultivating support from those younger cohorts is going to go a long way.
That's some awesome insights that you've just given our listeners there, John. So thanks for explaining that one. I think this is something that will play out over the coming year and we'll keep a close eye on it. Let's move on now to our third story, which is all about Coinbase, because obviously, John, you're here. So we want to get some insights into what's going on with Coinbase abroad and here, but also let's touch on maybe the strategy in Australia and how you're planning to navigate the market here at the moment.
Aussies could have been onboarded to Coinbase ever since kind of 2013 through one of our offshore entities, like lots of the international players. We relaunched the business fully onshore as part of what we call our go deep or go broad strategy for international in October 2022. So a little bit prior to that, they hired some people in the market, myself included. We had quite a nice launch down here and had some colleagues down and support from Blockchain Australia and a bunch of partners, Zepto and JP Morgan and others, and effectively had to re-onboard as many people as we could. So we offboarded everyone, and that was north of 1.5 million people. I think we were quoted as having been on the platform at some point in time, and then the crypto winter struck, and so trying to re-onboard people at that point in time when they probably downloaded Bamboo, Stake, Robinhood, I don't know, crypto.com, OKX, Binance, FTX, everyone else was challenging. But during that time, we've clearly had some pretty big events in the market and can refer to two pretty big names that everyone will know. And so we're seeing a slow kind of flight to quality of people who appreciate that there are some kind of TradFi elements in this exchange business, you know, if you want to be a really reputable player and lend yourself to more than just the DeFi market. You know, we were just as much kind of in a period of, I'd say, conservative spending, and we had a couple of riffs. These very big, you know, American kind of reduction in forces and as they call them in terms of layoffs. And that happened to some of the local exchanges here as well. But I think a lot of the local exchanges managed to retain their good people, and we were lucky in APAC we did as well. So we reallocated some of those people, redeployed them, some of that resource, and super excited to say that we have budget this year for marketing, for affiliate marketing, for search, for paid, for influencers, for all sorts of stuff. And so we've always been a little bit handicapped and curtailed by our own internal organization in terms of international being a newer part of the business, and also a lot of the headwinds and uncertainty from the regulation here with ASIC, you know, putting a bit of a gray cloud over everyone and everyone wanting to be very cautious about what they publicize in terms of some of their products. And I think this quarter we're going to really be returning to being a best-in-class player in the market with, you know, huge respect for CoinSpot and SwiftX and others. And I think we'll be on par with what they're offering their customers in terms of local campaigns. We also have some other pretty big legs of the business, our INTX International Exchange. We came to that game very late vis-a-vis Binance and previously FTX. So that's an offshore exchange out of Bermuda. We have our retail advanced or RAT trading platform, which we're going to be making a lot more noise about. That's a nice step up for advanced traders. And then if you look at the business in terms of the three main pillars, retail is our kind of day job, and that's the bulk of the business. We have an institutional business that competes for custody and competes with people like Zodia and others, working with banks and digital funds and asset managers, etc. And there are a number of Aussie ETFs that are looking to list on the ASX, so we're working with those. But the most exciting part of the business is really the last one, which we call, you know, Web3 or ecosystem, and that's where Base fits in, our layer 2 Ethereum. And so we get out of bed every day to do retail and a bit of insto, and there are difficult margins and it's a challenging business as you scale it. But the stuff that's exciting, as I'm sure it is for you and your listeners, is everything that's happening in DeFi. And so there's three or four pretty cool projects going on with Base out of Australia, probably 15 to 20 significant ones around Asia, you know, lots in places like Korea and up in Singapore and Hong Kong. And it's really about, you know, working out which projects are going to get kind of global reach. So the advantage of Base, if you're down in Australia, is that you get access to tens of millions of users who are using Coinbase Wallet in other markets. And a lot of them are in that North American market where, you know, DeFi is a lot more mature and this stuff is a lot more mainstream with brands and gaming and partners, etc. So those are the big three buckets of business that we look at. The go deep, go broad strategy is, you know, a go deep market is Australia, Brazil, Canada, the US, most of the EU and the UK, where we've got all those licenses. We're leaning into the regulation hard. We're leaning into MiCA. We're right up against the SEC and really trying to, you know, we've got boards of directors and strong governance and compliance structures in place. And you know, that's a cost to doing business, that there's a burden in terms of that. You can't move quite as fast sometimes. The go broad markets are places like the Indonesias of the world, the Nigerias, the Argentinas, where these huge populations, usually linked to quite high inflation, a lot of skepticism around US dollar links and pegs. And that's where we go with, you know, Coinbase Wallet. Again, lots of stuff with Base, you know, P2P products, etc. So that's how we're really looking to kind of look at the bigger picture. The nice thing about Australia is I raised the flag for, you know, this market in North America, trying to get the attention of the exec team, is that we've got this really strong crypto adoption. We've got Immutable, we've got Alluvium, we've got BlockEarner, we've got all these companies that are pretty world-class. And then we've got six Coinbase venture portfolio companies that we spend a lot of time with as well. So not the biggest market, but kind of hitting above our weight.
A couple of things that piqued my interest there, John, that I might just ask you to elaborate on. You know, we have a new regulatory regime coming here in Australia where, you know, digital asset exchanges will be required to either self-custody or use a custodian. I know that you mentioned that you would working with your potentially some ETF providers here in Australia and, of course, in the US. Will you guys be providing onshore custody, which is an important step for, you know, landscape here in Australia?
Jumping right to the juicy questions, Blake.
I'm just curious, mate. That's an important one.
That's one we ask ourselves a lot. So we're kind of seeking legal opinion on that. And right now, there's just not the clarity from ASIC or Treasury on that. I think you can direct people to our own token mapping consultation. We spent a lot of effort on that and had great engagement from both Treasury and ASIC. I think it's quite clear our preference is not for onshore custody.
Right.
We think it goes against the grain of decentralized assets just more broadly. We don't necessarily see that in terms of custody requirements for other parts of our business. And we're fully listed and have to disclose everything we do. And I think we've got pretty strong technology, and we spend a huge amount of time about being vigilant about technology. So one of the points we made was that actually having custody in one place is not as safe as decentralizing it and having it spread around the globe. So definitely ask people to take a look at our submission. Happy to flick that to you so you can share it with your listeners.
Yeah, I tend to agree, John. You know, people should be using the best global providers and not be ring fenced to the Australian market, where we just don't have the size to bring these actors onshore to provide your full service here. So yeah, I tend to agree, but certainly an important point as we move forward through the regulatory process. My second question there was really about Base. You know, this is a big move for Coinbase to develop a layer 2 scaling solution for Ethereum. And, you know, there's a lot of benefits of using the Base chain. Do you just want to describe the point of difference for our audience around why someone would want to use Base versus Polygon or, one of the other Ethereum layer 2 chains?
Yeah, oftentimes I think it's just kind of brand association and kind of imbued trust and getting access to the team and Jesse Pollack's, kind of team. And are there other parts of the Coinbase ecosystem that it makes sense for you to be working with? I think there was a lot of skepticism from a lot of founders in the industry and purists, let's call them kind of, crypto purists, who say, why is this big corporate org, launching Base? And it really was an internal project that Brian just gave to Jesse and said, look, let's go for it. Let's put our best engineers onto it. Layer 2s are going to be really important. All these gas fees are way too expensive. We're kind of hammering ourselves by making all this stuff expensive and complicated. How can you simplify it and make it have more appeal for everyday users? We just had a Chinese New Year NFT program running with Farcaster with Coinbase Wallet. And it was, wrapped together in a really short amount of time with the new Farcaster kind of frames, which are, only kind of weeks old. And so the speed at which you can, be developing programs is really fast. But I think we're kind of learning how to do that. And I don't think the jury's out yet on how many layer twos there will be or whether they need to be consolidated or who's going to be in the market. But I would say the leadership of Base is quite independent from Coinbase in terms of the day-to-day, spot trading business for Bitcoin or whatever other assets we're listing. So I think that's a bit of a foil to some of the criticisms. And clearly the adoption's been really strong and really rapid. So, it's a bit of a kind of democratic free market out there. People can use whatever layer two they want. And I think it's just early days. So we've been really grateful for those people who have dived in and gotten to understand it and work with it.
I think it'll come a time when, most retail participants in these networks won't even know that they might be using Base versus Polygon. Transactions and actions and apps will just be using the best protocol to achieve the outcome that they're trying to achieve. But it's awesome to see Coinbase moving in this direction and growing out.
Yeah, and a massive props to the people in Australia. We've had 4 or 5 Base days, and we want to have one out your way in Perth. We've had them in Melbourne and Sydney, and 3 or 4 of them. And we just need to put a few on the calendar, and we've had some great partners helping us on that.
Well, let us know. We'll make it happen for sure. Love to you to come to Perth. But look, as we do round out that story, Coinbase, is such an important part of this, community and this ecosystem. And Brian and his vision's always been something that a lot of people look to. And I noticed that you've put that State of Crypto report out recently. And I think what we'll do is we'll put that in the show notes too for any of our users who want to take a look at that, so you can do so. But I think that's probably a really good spot too to take a break, folks. And when we come back, we'll move on to our short, sharp news bites. Welcome back. You're listening to the Crypto Curious podcast. Myself and Blake and our guest John today from Coinbase. We're going to jump into our short, sharp news bites today. Blake, you're up first with some news from South Korea.
Yeah, that's right. In South Korea, they are now cracking down on crypto crimes, setting a precedent with life imprisonment for those making over $3.8 million USD in illegal crypto profits. This move is part of a broader regulatory positioning aiming to protect investors and ensure market transparency. And this is really typified by this next story from a UN probe looking at $3 billion in North Korean cyber attacks on crypto firms. So in a turn of events, the UN is on the trail of North Korea, which has hacking groups that have generated about $3 billion over the past 6 years. These digital asset thieves are linked to about 58 attacks. And there's a comprehensive report about this. Maybe we could post it in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put the link notes in there, yeah.
And, there's growing concerns that this is increasing in frequency. Pretty crazy stuff here, that they've been able to, learn how to do this and, take advantage of it to generate funds.
Yeah, I think they're making more in crypto hacking
than any other industry.
Than any other industry in North Korea. So there we go. Okay, moving on. Bits, a Bitcoin Ordinals gaming project revealed by the OGs of the team. So this is the Deadfellas creators, the DFZ Labs, and they've introduced Bits, which is a gaming project leveraging Bitcoin Ordinals, as everyone seems to be doing. They aim to mint out 10,000 Bitcoin Ordinals and develop a game that allows holders to contribute creatively. So this is minting on Magic Eden, and Bits is said to represent a novel blend of blockchain technology in interactive gaming. So they kind of got a bit of a hybrid going on here. The project behind this is a new digital trading card game inspired by the likes of Street Fighter. This game is still in early development and is aiming to be out later in the year. So I guess these guys are really well known in the industry. They've got a lot of cred behind them. They're launching this NFT collection now. I guess it's probably a bit of funding going towards this gaming project later in the year. So there you go. What's up next, John?
Exchanges happy with Europe's MiCA legislation. Crypto.com COO Eric Anziani shared enthusiasm for the MiCA legislation, envisaging it as a game changer for cryptocurrency exchanges across Europe. MiCA aims to harmonize the diverse regulatory landscape, simplifying expansion efforts and enhancing efficiency for compliant operations. This comes as the crypto industry faces increased scrutiny and emphasizes the need for uniform regulations to support innovation and protect users. Touche.
Yeah.
We've made Ireland our MiCA home and been making a fair bit of noise about that. And this is really a bright spot on the kind of global landscape for legislation as, lots of mainland European jurisdictions as well as Ireland just kind of forge forward and we really see some alignment across all these geos, particularly end of this year, early next year.
Yeah, I think it's important as this regulation comes out in regions like Europe, it gives other jurisdictions that, it may be struggling internally to develop legislation and move forward, something to look at and use as a bit of a
footprint.
Yeah, to develop their own regulations. So, no, it's really great to see. All right, MetaMask has done a deal with Robinhood to broaden crypto assets. So MetaMask and Robinhood are rolling out a new integration that more deeply ties the two services together to create a seamless on-ramp and off-ramp. I know Robinhood had, do you know how many users? Was it tens of millions of users in the US? Yeah. It allowed people to move in and out of the different apps. I think MetaMask is doing a great job at the moment, doing lots of partnerships in the ecosystem and broadening their product offering. I think they're doing an incredible job.
There you go. Okay, what's up next? We've got massive token unlocks in February that are coming this way. There'll be some big ones, ladies and gentlemen, this month with a whopping 800 million in unlocks across the board, with big players like Avalanche and Aptos leading the charge. So Aptos is dropping 25 million in tokens and Avalanche will be freeing up a few more million. So, you know, this is just like a big treasure chest being opened up. I don't know if this will make a big dent in the market, really, 800 million at this point.
Just for our customers' benefit, you know, when these tokens are locked up for the team or investors, they generally have a vesting schedule, which means that, you know, every year or every 6 months, the investors or the team or the organization that funds the R&D research and development can sell down a portion of the tokens that they have. And, you know, these sometimes come through in bigger waves. And I think that's what we're seeing this month.
What have we got next, John?
FTX. As Sam Bankman-Fried awaits a prison sentence, FTX customers await a surprise. Sounds fascinating. Ex-FTX CEO Sam Bankman-Fried is set to be sentenced next month for fraud charges related to the sudden collapse of his crypto exchange. His former customers are looking forward to full reimbursements of their lost funds. The firm's bankruptcy lawyers expect to fully repay its customers following a resurgence in the crypto market and appreciation of FTX's venture investments. Even with ongoing complexities in dispersing the recovered funds, this positive development is a far better outcome than most had expected.
Wow. That's, yeah.
No, it's awesome to see.
The liquidators are away to the races.
Yeah.
I think there are quite a few FTX shareholders in Australia, I think, who wish they had maybe had their assets on another exchange, because that'd be a long way ahead.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of over the story, but it's nearly coming to an end, I feel.
I might pick up this one here, Trace, on ENS. So Ethereum Name Service is kind of like a domain that you can buy, but it also acts like a wallet. So you could have, you know, for example, blake.eth, and then that could be used for a website, or you could also send your Ethereum or a stablecoin to it, and it also acts as a wallet. Now, they've done a partnership, the Ethereum Name Service, the ENS, has done a partnership with GoDaddy, which is one of the world's largest domain name retailers that people buy websites from. And this is massive. This is going to give your enormous exposure to the technology. You know, dot-coms are unaffordable now. People are using other, you know, tails on the
XYZs
and .ios and all sorts of things. And, you know, if ENS is, you know, comes to popularity, I think this is going to be an important step in the evolution of how people use the internet.
Okay, look, really quickly, lastly, for a bit of news, we have been reporting on the Ethereum's Denken upgrade. We've actually got a date now. It's March the 13th, so that one's a major shift towards more affordable transactions on layer twos. So that one is in there. But look, as we finish off the show, and while we do have you here, John, it would be remiss not to get your insights on all the big questions. Go as broad as you want here, but where do you see the market looking over the next few years, and how do we get, you know, that billion people into this market space?
Yeah, thanks, Tracy. And that's really Brian Armstrong's vision, right? How do you bring a billion people on chain? And you need some big countries to do it, so it helps if you're going into some big countries where there are lots of people. I just think for the punter on the street, we do need a few more use cases that are just really easy for people to adopt. And I think Blake was talking about that seamless movement between wallets and various parts of DeFi. It's not there yet. You know, if you want to get onto Farcaster and redeem your NFT, you know, you better have done that before and linked and bridged Ethereum and be pretty comfortable with that stuff. And that always doesn't work. But it's certainly better than most retail banks' banking apps. And I just think the way of the UX and the whole journey, it lends itself to this next generation. So I think the next generation are much more forgiving and experimental as well. And so I think those two things are dovetailing in the right direction. In terms of legislation, you know, you need to be patient and you need to keep fighting. When we talk about why is it so important in terms of that California demographic, the same is true for Australia. You know, the Liberal government under Frydenberg really had digital assets a lot further up the totem pole, and clearly Labor government, in, you know, very much aligned with its tradition, is all about consumer protection. So if you look at the macro story from Joe Longo and ASIC, anything that can harm the consumer, he's looking to hone in on that. And so that's why it's so important we get down to Canberra and show some of these, you know, great, you know, kind of companies that are going to be the next Atlassians and Zeros of Australia, because we have so much IP onshore here. Taking a step back to probably where I started in my career, you know, I had a banker at Goldman drag me into his office one day and say, turn on your mobile phone and I'll turn on my PC at the same time and let's see which one loads up first. And like, you know, I was on like a bad version of the WAP mobile internet within about 30 seconds. Meanwhile, his like desktop was still whirring up and the screen was still asleep and it was all coming together. And I spent a lot of time understanding the difference between the kind of fixed line engineering world and the mobile engineering world. And so mobile has managed to kind of, you know, leapfrog the kind of desktop world, but we kind of think that blockchain is going to even leapfrog everything else even faster. But unless you get a billion people on chain, that's going to have some delays. And that's why the mobile world was so successful, because the likes of Vodafone and these huge global networks, you know, literally got like a billion people onto mobile networks within 3 or 4 years of all that stuff kicking off in the late 90s, early 2000s, when you had those kind of Nokia brick phones, and then it all kind of took off. So I think you need to have a little bit of patience. And I still think there's lots of money being invested in this space. The capital allocation is probably a little bit more discerning than it was 2 or 3 years ago. But the train's left the station. And so, you know, I really hope Australia can be part of that journey.
Fantastic, Joe. I think that's a really great summary. And yeah, if all those things fall into place, then we'll be hitting that billion people sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So thanks so much for coming on the Crypto Curious today. Yeah, we'd love to have you back maybe in 12 months' time, and we can see where, you know, how the year's gone.
See where it's at. But yeah, thanks for coming on. I think, you know, it's been a great co-host to have, and it's been really insightful. So thank you, John. And that's the end of the show, folks. Thanks for coming along and finding out about crypto with us today. If you've enjoyed the journey, bring a friend along next time. We are all involved in this crypto market together. Keep exploring, and let's meet again next week for more crypto clarity. Until then, stay curious and stay connected. You can do this by joining the Crypto Curious Facebook page, our Instagram page, and be sure to hit subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast now. If you're looking to DCA into the crypto market, please have a look at the Bamboo app, and don't forget to use the code CURIOUS for $10 of free Bitcoin to get you started. There'll be some links in the show notes, and hopefully you can join us again next week. Bye for now.
See you guys.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services License 540697.